Good afternoon, everybody. The importance of today's class is manifold. One of the major points of today's class is that we are preparing for the higher message that is to be given the disciples before the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. That would be the 16th and the 17th chapters. And we are taking this pause to consolidate our gains and to take our checkpoints and find out if up to this point we have been following the Master. And so today we will review many points that have been coming up within our consciousness and review some of the attitudes we have been forced to take, some of the false methods we have used to protect ourselves against the evils of the world, so that finally out of this we can evolve into a state of consciousness which is ready and can say to the Master, now I'm ready for chapter 16. I'm ready for this sermon from high consciousness preparing me to walk through the Master's experience. Now, Joel's chapter is the 10th, and that's what we're going to discuss today, because it will prepare us for the 16th chapter of the Gospel of John. It shall not come nigh thee. And you might think that this is a promise that if you go to church on Sunday, or if you read your Bible, or if you're a diligent student who believes in God, that you're protected from the so-called evils of the world. However, that is not the promise of the statement at all. It does not say if you believe in God that you will be protected from the problems of the world and that they shall not come nigh thee. That is our misconstrued concept of what it says. It does say that it shall not come nigh thee if you live in the secret place of the Most High. And that is not just believing in God. It is living in God. And to illustrate the meaning of that, there's a story told by Joel. It's about a businessman who, being very successful in his own business, was also a seeker of the spiritual life. And there came a moment when he was ready for a big weekend vacation. It was July 4th, and he and his family were going to take this long weekend and take a motor trip. And being very diligent, very sincere, he got up at 5 a.m. on Friday morning. And he did what he called his protective work. From 5 to 6, he dwelled deeply in the understanding of truth, protecting himself and his family. The Bible had said, it shall not come nigh thee. And so he was trying his best. And then, about 6 or 7, the family got in the car, and they started on their weekend vacation. On Tuesday morning, he awoke in a hospital, and he discovered that he had been in a car wreck. The car had been demolished. Everybody in the family was in a different room of the hospital. And for the months that followed in convalescence, he kept asking himself the question, why did this happen when I even did my protective work? But he couldn't find an answer. And so he sought out a practitioner. And inasmuch as Joel was telling the story, presumably the practitioner was Joel. And he said to the practitioner, I did all I was supposed to do. I even did my protective work before the trip. What went wrong? And the practitioner said to him, well, what kind of protective work did you do? What were you protecting yourself against? Well, he said, the drunks on the highway, the alcoholic drivers, the bad drivers, the accidents that could happen. Now, we, when we do our protective work, must understand where this gentleman fell into the trap. so that we do not make the same mistake. Protective work is not protecting yourself against the evils of the world. And when this practitioner told the businessman that protective work means to know that there is nothing against which you must protect yourself, that was the beginning of a new insight for this individual. He learned a lesson, and he learned a lesson which made him later a very competent spiritual healer. Now perhaps we can, through his experience and his mistake, learn the same lesson. What are we protecting ourselves against? The moment you have something against which you're protecting yourself, you have denied the omnipresence of God. It shall not come nigh thee if you live in the secret place of the Most High. And the secret place of the Most High is the consciousness of the presence of God. Now, we'll go through 7 points. And each of these 7 points is very simple. And after you have them and know them, you'll find they become one point because they all mold together. And then as you practice them first to 7 points and then integrate them into your consciousness and finally make them one point so that you are single-pointed, you'll find you won't be doing the false kind of protective work that many people think they are going to use as a protection against evil. Let's start with our first point. God is omnipresent. This is the crux of your work. God is omnipresent. That means that it doesn't matter whether you see God or hear God or touch God or whether you have evidence that God is present. It doesn't matter if you feel the presence of God any more than it matters if you feel the presence of the sun in the sky. It's going to be there whether you feel it or not. God is going to be present whether you feel it or not. And so number one is to definitely establish that without this point, that God is omnipresent, you are not going to go anywhere in spiritual living. That is the cornerstone. You're going to have to live by it and even be willing to die by it, that you may live. God is omnipresent. If in any way you fail to be conscious that God is omnipresent, you will be separated from the very God you're seeking. And so first, God is omnipresent. That means here and there, around the corner, up in the sky, under the ocean, whether you're in a submarine or an airplane, makes no difference. God is present where you are, and God is present where you came from, and God is present where you're going all the way. Nothing will change it. God is present everywhere and now. This is the cornerstone of the Christ message. Who convinceth me that God is not present? Now, once you have established this, so that this is your living Bible, God is present here and God is present there, I care not what I see. I care not what picture comes to my attention. That has nothing to do with the fact that God is present. Two, where God is present, the power of God is present. And so once you've established the presence of God as a fact that can never change, a fact that can never yield to any other so-called fact, because it is the only fact there is, God is present, then you know that the power of God is present where God is present. And you've got your second point. God is present. The power of God is present. Now, the nature of God's power is perfection. That means perfection is present where the power of God is present. Always, wherever you are, God is present and the power of God is present, functioning, being itself, maintaining its perfection in all things. Nothing changes that. It matters not what you see or touch, what you hear, what you feel. That is the fact, the divine fact. God is present. God's perfect power is present too. Over there and over there and over there, up there and down there. In the four corners of the earth now, the perfect power of God is present. Now, further, wherever the perfect power of God is present, the very nature of perfection means that no imperfect power can be there. The functioning of that power is that it maintains its perfect power at all times. It is the governor of its own government. There is nothing present ever to upset or dethrone that perfect power. So that's the law. We have the law of God. I am present. My power is present. Everywhere in the universe. And then comes the world mind picture. And now evil appears. But stay with your law. Do not waver. Perfect power of God is present, and therefore there cannot be an evil power present. That's number three. There is no evil power present because the perfect power of God is present. I'm still not looking at appearances. I'm still not making judgments. I'm taking pure divine law and staying with it. God is present. God's power is present. Evil power cannot be present. Power is another word for cause. An evil cause cannot be present. There is no power to cause an evil because God's power is present. And therefore, the fourth point is, because there is no power of evil present to cause an evil, evil is not present. Once you have established the omnipresence of God, you can work your way to the fourth point that evil cannot be present. It is impossible. And that word evil has no cause because there is no evil power present to cause evil. Only the power of God is present. This is your divine law. Now, what does evil include? It includes the alcoholic on the driveway, the alcoholic on the road. It includes the accident on the freeway. It includes unemployment. It includes limitation. It includes lack. It includes everything that is unlike God. And it is impossible because there is no evil power present, because God power is present. And so every evil that you may see is not present. The moment you think it is present, or believe it is present, or accept that it is present, you have committed spiritual adultery. You have walked away from the divine truth that God is present, that God's power is present, that there is no power of evil present to cause evil. And therefore the evil, you see, is not present. It simply is not there. Your fourth point is, evil is not there. Evil is impossible. And it makes no difference whether that evil is a war, or genocide, or manslaughter, or rape, or arson, or flood of fire. It could only be there if God were absent. And God is present. Therefore, the chain of command establishes that the evil must be something other than what it seems to be, and that's your fifth point. The evil which is not there is temptation. It is the temptation to make you believe it is there. It is a world mind picture coming through as a shadow of thought within your individual mind, appearing as a shadow of thought within your individual mind, as the accident, as the flood, as the hurricane, as the problem, as the lack, as the limitation, as the unemployment, as the argument, as the dispute, as the error. Always it is world mind presenting a sense image, sometimes a group sense image. a national sense image, a cosmic sense image. But always it is a sense image, whether it is 5 million people seeing it or one. It cannot be there because the power of God is there. And so it is a temptation to make you believe it is there. And the fifth step then is evil being, temptation, it cannot be there. Evil is the denial of the presence of God. That is the temptation coming to you. And at that point, your fifth point is recognize evil as temptation. Recognize evil as temptation. The temptation to believe that God is not present, God's power is not present, there is another power to cause evil, that the evil is there. All of this is the temptation coming to you as the appearance of evil. Recognized evil as temptation. That is your fifth point. And then your sixth point is obvious. Reject it. Reject that temptation. Not the evil. You can't reject the evil. It isn't there. Reject the temptation to accept it. And that is where we want to pause and see what that means. Reject the temptation to accept it. Now then, there is a point, a moment, sometimes just an instant, the flick of an eyelash, when you unwittingly accept evil. That moment is when you must learn to stand still. There it is, it appears, and if you are asleep, you accept it. It's like opening a door. You open a door of your mind and you let the evil in. Now you've got to get it out somehow. Why go that far? We are to be awake, not asleep. Evil is temptation. And the only reason it gets that far is because we had not dwelt in the secret place of the Most High, that God is present. And if we dwell in it, there is a way so that you can stand alert, awake, not asleep, and at the appearance of evil, the temptation to accept it comes directly to you, but you do not open the door of your consciousness. You are able to observe what appears to be the evil, recognizing the temptation that is now presenting itself to you as a hurricane, as a flood, as anything wrong in your life, anything wrong in the lives of the world around you. And you look at it and say, no, this I will not accept into my consciousness as a reality. Why? God is present. God's power is present. There is no power of evil present. Therefore, evil has no cause and cannot be present. That is the temptation of the world mind, and I have caught it. I will not let it enter into my consciousness. The rejection of the temptation is your sixth point. It is your refusal to be moved by the appearance. And the seventh is to rest in the knowledge that God is present. God is power. God is all. And beside God, nothing is present. Rest in the knowledge that God actually is. God is present. You come right back to your first point and you rest in the assurance of it. And when you have practiced these points sufficiently, you won't have to go through seven points. You'll simply know God is present. Because that's all that omnipresence means. When you unravel it, you get the seven points. And when you have the seven points, you can come back to the one God is present. There's no other presence where God is present, and everywhere God is present. Now then, this is what the Bible means when it says it shall not come nigh thee. When you dwell in the conscious awareness that God is present, then you're not tempted to believe God is not present. You're not tempted to accept an error which can never occur in the presence of God. On the other hand, when you accept the error, In that moment, you have accepted that God is not present. And that acceptance, although not conscious, not voluntary, that acceptance is your way of saying, God and I are separated. You see, if God isn't present, then you and God are separated. And that separation is the result of your belief, though unconscious, that you and God are not one. The inner belief that I and God are not one becomes the belief in the separation from God. And then what happens? Your separation from God becomes visible as the problem. That's what the problem is. The problem is the external evidence that you have permitted yourself to be separated from the presence of God. Every discord in your life, every limitation, every lack, every major and minor state of illness or emotional upset, whatever the problem might be, it is your outer manifestation from this invisible pyramid of first the unconscious belief that I and the Father are separated, widening into the acceptance of a situation which could not occur in the presence of God, finally being manifest as your problem. Your sense of separation externalizes as the problem. Now then, let's practice this very carefully. Instead of going into three meditations a day as a human being, or going into protective work as a human being, let us recognize that we must dwell in the conscious awareness of the presence of God. Our secret place is making God our constant companion, living in God, abiding in the conscious awareness that here God is. There's no other way for the power of God to express in you and through you. Now, another example is an individual who tried again and again and again to secure some kind of support for a business he had in mind. And no matter what he did, there was no support coming. And he was like the man doing protective work. He knew that he was honest and sincere and diligent. Why couldn't he get the support? He was not conscious of the fact that God is present. And the way he was unconscious of the fact is the way we are unconscious of the fact. He thought he was present. You see, if you think you're present, where's God? To be conscious of the presence of God means where you stand, where your neighbor stands, where your children stand, where your parents stand, where everyone you know stands is the presence of God. God is omnipresent means there is no other presence. This is the fact of the allness of God. You see why it's the cornerstone? And when you're not conscious of it, then the world mind functions subliminally and operates through you, and as Joel puts it, we become a blotting paper for all of the thoughts of the world. Now let's go back to number 6 or 5, whichever it was, when the temptation of evil presents itself, learning how to not accept it. We're looking at, let's take a case that happens many times. You hear footsteps while you're in your house alone. Right outside your door, in the back of your yard, who would be there? Nobody's supposed to be there. You thought you locked the doorway to the patio, and you're alone. The temptation now is to, what am I going to do about this? In fact, I hear someone stealthily walking up the patio. The mind runs wild with its imaginative ideas about what can happen. You're caught unaware. And now you're thinking, should I get to the phone and call the police station? Dare I open the door and peek out? Won't that give them an entree to the house? What shall I do? Point number one, only God is present. God is omnipresent. God isn't permitting burglars to enter your home. God isn't jeopardizing your life. God is present. The power of God is present. There is no power of evil present. Therefore, no evil can be present. What is happening is, point five, the temptation to believe that God is not present, the power is not present, the evil is present, and there's a power causing it. You recognize this temptation. And now you do not accept this temptation. If you do, you step out of creation into recreation. If you do, you step out of divine thought into human thought. That's the switchover. The minute we think the evil is present, we're not in creation, we're in recreation. Recreated thought. When we know the evil is not present, we're in divine thought. And then when within, we have the assurance that I know the truth, and I can look at that which appears to be footsteps on the patio, knowing only the presence of God is, I come to my sixth step, therefore there is no threat outside my door. It simply isn't there, even though I heard it. It cannot be there. And your seventh step is resting that God is. What happens to the person who is creating the footsteps? You can ask the Holy Ghost. I have no interest in what happened. Except that you'll find it's either somebody to deliver the groceries, or it's just a child who happened to stray in, or you heard something that wasn't there, or something of that nature, but the threat will dissolve. Why? Because the law is infallible. And every time you practice these 7 points, even if you just get right down to the nitty-gritty of it, God is present now, here, there, everywhere. I don't need any more points than that. And rest in the knowledge that this being so, all is well. The picture dissolves. Oh, there are so many little things and big things that happen. You could go on forever making a catalog of the wonderful things that happen as you rest in omnipresence. And then you have so many bypaths to take from there. God is present. And therefore the intelligence of God is present. Right here where we are is the intelligence of God. That infinite intelligence is always present. Is it permitting anyone to break its divine law? You see, the breaking of the divine law is the illusion. Divine law can't be broken. It simply isn't here to break divine law. Now, as we dwell in these things, and you discover that you can depend on the presence of God always, to dissolve the illusion or temptation of appearances that come to you, even to the point of miracles, or what would appear to be miracles to others, then your confidence becomes unbounded. And you're ready to live in the foundation stone that because of the omnipresence of God, I can now move to a higher level of activity than I have been dwelling in. Before, I used to do protective work. That's a sort of a negative way of living, isn't it? Protecting ourselves against this and that, even by knowing the omnipresence of God. Suppose we now turn that around and do progressive work. Supposing we now can accept that because God is present, whatever God wills in me today is going to be done. And even if it's something I've never done before, it's going to be done. Supposing we begin to live from the positive side of spirit instead of the negative side of protection. The presence of God is the only protection we need. Now let's see that we were trying to protect our human selfhood. When all your protective work is complete and you know in the presence of God no protection is needed, just the conscious awareness of God's presence, there is no longer anyone there to protect. The real trap of the businessman who came to Joel because his protective work hadn't worked was that he was protecting his human self instead of going to God to realize his spiritual self. Translated, if you were unemployed or limited in some way and you wanted to go to God within to the realization of the omnipresence in order to remove that condition, you would have fallen into the identical trap. That would come in your number five place. There is no such condition except in a human self. That's the temptation to believe that you have such a condition. And the purpose of today's class is to make clear to you that there are no conditions in the presence of God. And there is no other presence. Every condition that we accept is the false acceptance that we are a second self. And that where we are, the presence of God is not the only self. We have no protective work to do at this level because we are that self which is the self of God. And if we're not that self, we are denying that God is the only presence. God is omnipresent. Where are you? If you are trying to protect your visible self, you are not accepting God is omnipresent. And if you are willing and determined to accept it, you must finally come to the conclusion that you are an invisible being. You can never be a visible being. The visible you that's trying to protect something is not you. You are invisible self. So we graduate above protective work in the knowledge that the presence of God, which is omnipresent, is the invisible vine, the Christ, the self, and I, being that self, I am all that the Father is, and I have no lack or limitations. There is no evil in my selfhood, which is the infinite self. You're still at the place of five or six where you're able to look at temptation knowing that it is trying to tempt you into being a visible self. The word invisible now becomes very important. If you had all of the material things of this world, there would come a day when you would have to lose them, give them up. The Christ message isn't to try to show us how to have all the material things of this world. It's to try to show us that our destiny is to be independent of the material things of this world. To live in God being. I live, yet not I. And if you look at that statement by Paul, you might be surprised to find that there's something in that statement you had overlooked. We all remember it to say, I live, yet not I, Christ liveth my life. We forget a few words that he said just a moment before. He said, I am crucified with Christ, and therefore I live, yet not I, Christ liveth my life. I am crucified with Christ. I too give up the physical, visible sense of me. The fellow who was worried about the accidents, the alcoholics on the road, the national budget, or who is going to get in as president or vice president. Who is that fellow worried about these things? That's the one who doesn't know God is omnipresent as the only. I am crucified with Christ. As Jesus refuses to be a visible person, I refuse to be a visible person. For spirit is God, and spirit is omnipresent, and spirit is invisible, and I am spirit. Now you must have your 7 points as your foundation in order to be able to come higher to the invisible nature of your being, so that all evil presenting itself to you is now presenting itself to the invisible self. The invisible self who can say, only spirit is here. Only the spirit of God is here, and it is I. Only the spirit of God is there, and it is I. Now the world has tried to overcome the evils of the world. For instance, you might take any prominent person in religious work, and if you asked him one question, you would discover quickly where he stands in truth. You might say, for example, to a clergyman, please tell me why God permits 1 million people each year to die of cancer. Please tell me why God permitted 6 million Hebrews to be burned in German ovens. Please tell me why God permitted nations to go to war against each other. Tell me why. And I can assure you the answer you got would be a very stock answer, something like, well, let's see. In the first place, we must be humble. We must trust God. We must trust his infinite wisdom to know what is right for us. That might be one stock answer. Another might be, well, punishment. The world has to be punished for its sins. Another might be that we've given our souls to the devil. And you can go down the list of the vague answers that would be given, provided the individual you asked even deigned to give you an answer. They might look at you with a paternal glance and think, how naive a question. Why did God permit this, that, and the other atrocity? But I want to tell you this, that any answer of that nature is really a statement that the individual giving you that answer does not believe in the presence of God. There's only one answer that's true. The answer that is true is that God does not permit nations to go to war. God does not permit 1 million persons to die of cancer every year. God does not permit genocide. God does not permit manslaughter. God does not permit the evils of the world. And therefore, and this is the answer that you will never get from all the religions of the world, therefore, these things cannot be happening. Now, if you think they're happening, you also think that God is impotent, or that God is indifferent, or that God is cruel. If they are happening, you are saying God is not God. If they are happening, if one single child in this entire world dies of cancer, we have said that we are atheists. And it doesn't matter how many clergymen in the world think that these things are happening, they are practicing atheism. Atheism is the belief that God is not present. You can believe in a God in the sky, but you've got to believe in a God on earth too. If you don't have a God on earth, you don't have a God. You've got chaos. Now, most of us have been practicing the presence of God sufficiently to know that God is present, not as an abstract idea, but as a living force, maintaining a perfect universe wherever there is a witness, an individual, a consciousness that can abide in the secret place of the Most High. Any clergyman can prove it when they can abide in the presence of God as a fact, not a word. Then all that is unlike the presence of God cannot be here. Its very existence would be a denial of the presence, or else it would be a statement that it being here, God is permitting evil to be here. And so these 7 points are going to be the fulcrum from which we function in preparation for the higher message, the liberating message. In a way, you might say that as you learn to practice only the presence and to see that all temptation is the material action of the world, all of it, the good material action and the bad material action, is the temptation to deny the presence of God. And when you are able to give yourself to this work, not on a part-time basis, because you think that you've got 8 hours of work to do at an office, but to make it your constant companion, no matter what you do and where you do it, never being asleep to the presence of God, then you will find that you are really the forerunner of a new age, what is called the remnant, the enlightened remnant, the seed of a new age. Those who will stand in the conscious knowledge that here, right in my office, right in my home, right on the freeway, right in the ghetto, right on the battlefield, the presence of God is all that is present. The power of God is all that is present. There is no power of evil. There is no evil to be here. That which is presented to me as evil or error or accident or lack is the hallucination of the world mind coming through my mind as a shadow, a temptation which I now reject. God is present. God is all. And there I rest with confidence. Sometimes it'll come to you as an instantaneous awareness without having to go through point by point. It'll be just a quick shift of the gears. And it may even reach you at a point where you don't have to shift, because that is to become your permanent consciousness. God is, period. That's how you start your day, and you spend as much time in it as possible, and you continue in that awareness no matter where you go. God is present. You're not protecting against anything. You're recognizing that my only protective work is the knowledge that God being present, there's nothing here to protect against. The universal intelligence of the Father is on the road. Where's a bad driver? That's the temptation to believe that the universal intelligence is not here. Why is there a bad driver? Because there's no one aware that the universal intelligence is here. Aware of it, you discover the bad drivers aren't bad drivers at all. They were separated appearances, but the moment you were aware of universal intelligence present, somehow something happened to the bad drivers. They became aware. The alcoholic drivers weren't drunk anymore. Why? Because the power of God is the only power that's present. In the absence of it in your consciousness, you have the chaos of the world. In the presence of it, you have the government of God functioning through your consciousness, and then you discover that the whole world is in your consciousness. There are no cars on the road, there are no people. They're all in your consciousness. And because your consciousness is the consciousness of God, they are all brought into the government of God in your consciousness. You find why one is a majority, when that one is in the conscious awareness of the presence of God. And so today, if you still insist that you have something wrong in your life, you're merely saying that you're not conscious of the presence of God. The remedy is, be ye conscious of the presence of God. For if you will abide in that secret place, you will find that you are under the shadow of the Almighty. The power of God functioning, maintaining, becomes the very law of your being. Every healing of the Christ is the conscious, continuous awareness that God being present, nothing else is here. I don't have to remove the evil, correct the evil, improve the evil. I must know that God is here. The evil cannot be here too. It didn't even stray in. It just never was here. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. Not strayed, but stayed. We stray out of the conscious knowledge of God's presence, or we stay in the conscious knowledge. And that makes the difference between employment and unemployment. Lack or abundance. Truth or the falsehood. Happiness or sorrow, success or failure. You can turn the blackest moments into sunshine, but not by trying to do it out there. You've got to do it in your consciousness. And have faith that when you touch the consciousness of God within yourself, its power will manifest out there and change the blackness to sunshine. If you try to do it out there, you've fallen into the temptation to believe that it has to be done out there. There is no out there. There's only God. Don't reach out to the world that isn't there. Go back to that Matthew statement. Lay up your treasures in heaven. Why? For there is no moth or rust to corrupt. There are no thieves to steal. You can have all the material possessions in this world, but they will run through your fingers like grains of sand. Time runs out. You've got to lay up your treasures in your knowledge of the presence of God as the very invisible presence of your own being. That's your treasures in heaven. The knowledge of the presence of God as the invisible presence of your own being is the revelation of your spiritual identity as living spirit, invisible being, possessing all that is of God, because oneness is the truth of being. You don't have to get an invisible self employed. You don't have to remove lack from an invisible self. You don't have to heal the bone of an invisible self. And when you are that invisible self, it will prevent the bone fracture. It will prevent the unemployment. It will prevent the error. And if by chance you stray instead of stay in that consciousness, the moment you return, it will remove the result of your momentary separation. You are never unemployed. You are separated from the knowledge that the presence of God is standing where the world sees you. You are never lacking. You are never limited. You are never in error. You are simply unaware that where you stand is the invisible presence of God. Holy ground. And when you know it, when you live with it, not just in three meditations, not before work and after work, but always, then you are crucifying your visible self. I am crucified with Christ. I live, yet not I. Christ liveth my life. All temptations of the world are meaningless when you know yourself. And then, it shall not come nigh thy dwelling, neither the accident nor the unemployment, nor the pain nor the sorrow, because these things are in the false sense of self that we entertain. Now practice those 7 points, please, until you can reel them off so fast without much thought that it becomes effortless. Catch yourself when you stumble, repair the damage, until you have this consciousness with which to face the world. Nothing in this world can convince me that God is not here functioning as God. And with that level, you'll find when Jesus Christ speaks to us, within or without, in the Bible or within our own consciousness, we have ears that can hear. We have removed all of the barriers of conditioned world mind, the concepts, the clutter, and the pure words of the Christ then fall in a habitation that is ready for them. Crucify yourself with Christ. Crucify the world with Christ. Crucify all false situations with Christ. Crucify matter and time and space with Christ. Get out of atheism, out of spiritual adultery, accepting God 24 hours a day, every second, as the presence. Then we're not atheists. And the power of God will shine through you, totally. As we quietly meditate, first run through in your mind your 7 points so they become easy and quick. They move in quick succession one after the other. And this time I'm not going to remind you. You do it yourself. Let's just dwell in that consciousness of those 7 points. When you get to the seventh, you just sit back and you rest in God. The peace usually comes when you do that. It is a sign that you have really cleansed your house. Now we are not tempted, but faithful. Not believers only in the Word of God as a noun, but as a living reality. Here on earth, as in heaven. We become faithful witnesses of the living presence of God. Disciples, friends of Christ, ready to prove by living in Christ that God is here on earth, that we walk in God and God in us. The remnant, the seed of a new age.